Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Yod Amud Bet, 7 lines from the bottom. Amar Mar, Tifteh, Tifteh. The word Tifteh appears twice in the Pasuk, and from that we learn, Tifteh Miyad, Tifteh Koshuhu. You can do the Pidyon immediately, and you can do it with any amount. Shita, what would you have thought otherwise? Itzrich, Sachadat Kamina Ol V'itkish LiBechor Adam. Since the Pasuk by the Bechor connects it to Bechor Adam, it does it both in Bamidbar Yudchet, as well as in Shmot Yud Gimel. And Shmot Yud Gimel says, Bechol Petr Chamor Tifteh Bisteh, Imlo Tifteh Barafto, Bechol Bechor Adam, Bebanecha Tifteh. In the same Pasuk, you have Petr Chamor and Bechor Adam. And with regards to Bechor Adam, we know that the din is, Ho Ve'itkish Bechor Adam, Ma Bechor Adam, Achar Shloshim Yom, can only view the pidyon after 30 days for the bechor, b'chamesh, and it's done with 5 shkalim, shel kodesh, or 5 sela, hainami, achash loshim b'chamesh. Given that hekesh in the pasuk, you would think you'd have the same din applicable by petar chamor, kamash malan. So that's what the tifteh comes to teach us. Tifteh miyad, you don't have to wait the 30 days, you can redeem it immediately. Tifteh koshu, and that you also don't have to have 5 sela or 5 shekel be the amount of the pidyon, it can be any amount. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda Omer, En Ptia Pachot Mishekel. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says that you can't have any redemption that's less than a shekel. The Gemara says, Mimanovshach. Trying to understand this position of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, Imak Kimekish Lebechor Adam, if he does subscribe to that Hekesh Lebechor Adam, Chamesh Libai, then he should have a minimum of 5 shekel that he should require. Ilo Mekish, if he has no Hekesh, Shekel Menole. Where did he come up with this threshold of a shekel that's the minimum amount in terms of pidyon? So as the Mara says, Olam lo mekish. Truth is that he doesn't have a hekish. Amar Rova, Amar Kra, but he gets it from the pasuk by Arachin. Kol erkechaye b'shekel hakodesh. Kol arachim shatamarich lo yeh b'chutim mishekel. Because it says by Arachin that any erech that you give will be with shekel hakodesh, implying that that's the currency that you're using, so the minimum amount in that currency will be a shekel of kodesh, so all assessments that you make shall be no less than a shekel of kodesh. And this is an assessment. Here you try to deal with the value of the petar chamor. Rabbanan disagree with that because they say, how behesek yarkti? That limitation is only with regards to the issue of assessing someone who cannot afford to pay the arachin. As we'll learn in Masechet Arachin, that they do not have to pay the full amount. The Kohen assesses how much of the amount that they committed through Arachin to pay that they can pay, and then they pay that off and they discharge their obligation. As if you get some sort of tax waiver where you can't afford the whole amount of taxes that you owe, so they assign you the amount that you could pay, and you pay that and that discharges your whole obligation. So the same thing by Arachin, and that's what the Chachamim say, that Hesek Yad is only relevant once you clear the threshold of a shekel. The Kohen looks at this guy and says, he can only afford a half shekel, that's not going to discharge your obligation vis-a-vis the liability that you have by Arachin. Once you cross over a threshold of a shekel, then that discharges your obligation vis-a-vis the Arachin that you owe. So they see this being uniquely associated with Arachin, because that's where the pasuk's written. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda extends it to a larger swath of assessments, which means any assessment dealing with Hektesh or Kodesh, that also has the same threshold. Amar Rav Nachman, Halacha Kidivrei Chachamim. Rav Nachman says that the Halacha is like the Chachamim in this case. Now that you have the Halacha like the Chachamim, you have no threshold. And so now they're going to ask, Vikama, is there still any minimum threshold? Okay, a shekel is not the minimum threshold, but maybe there's some other threshold that's the minimum threshold. Amar Rav Yosef, Afilu Patruza Bardanko. It's even as Rashi describes over here, the patruza is a sekahush, a very weak seh, that's only worth a danko, which is 1/6 of a dinar. It's an unhealthy animal, plus it's not worth very much, it's very small. So Amarava, ap anan nami tanina, that's also found in our Mishnah. In the Mishnah, when describing the seh that you can use for the petar chamor, our Mishnah says gadol v'katan. It can be both large or small. There's no defining size for the seh. So over here, a patruza bartanko is katan. And so it's already in the Mishnah, where it says pshita. It's not clear here where the pshita references to. Rashi says it references back to Rav Yosef's statement, which is that the patruza bartanko is okay. Because the Mishnah seems to say katan, and katan should mean anything. So then what do I need Rav Yosef to tell me that? Or you could say the pshita is going on Rava's statement, which is that Rava brings it from the Mishnah and says, oh, that's what we say in the Mishnah. It's obvious that that's what the Mishnah is saying. Ma'od etema, the Gemara says it's not pshita, because I would have thought, kule hai lo. That's just too far. Katan has a limitation to it. It's not going to go as far as you're saying. Inami patruza lo, kamash malan, that both of those do work. So the patruza bardanka has two deficits to it. The first of which is that it's a patruza, that it's a weak set, it's not a healthy set. The second thing is that it's so small that it's worth so little. It's a bardanka. So you would have thought that katan still means healthy, and katan means something that has some value, not so little as a bardanka. So that's what Rav Yosef comes along to tell you, that the definition of katan in the Mishnah is even that far, that a patruza bardanka. Or, again, question of pshita and rava, then the proof from the Mishnah is not sufficient or not obvious, because katan, you could have thought, had some limitation to it. Has to be healthy, has to be worth some value. The answer in the end is, neither of those apply. It can be weak, and it can be a bardanka. It can even have both of those deficits, and it's still called a katan. It qualifies as a seh for peter chamor. Rabbi Yehuda Nisiah, havalei peter chamor. He had a peter chamor, firstborn chamor that he needed to redeem. Shadr the kamei to Rabbi Tarfon. He sent it to Rabbi Tarfon, which is extremely difficult. Rabbi Tarfon's a peer of Rabbi Akiva. We see in the stories in the Haggadah and other places throughout Shas, where they're speaking, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon. The earliest Rabbi Yehuda Nisiah is a grandson of Rabbi, the first generation of Amora in Eretz Yisrael, the grandson of Rabbi, the Masadar of Mishnah. And then the next two Rabbi Yehuda Nisiahs afterwards are the grandson, and then the great-great-grandson, meaning that they're named alternate generations, the same name. The oldest Rabbi Yehuda Nisiah would be the grandson of Rabbi, so it's hard to believe that he saw Rabbi Tarfon. So how this exactly transpired is not clear here. So the assumption is you'd have to change the girsa in order for this to work, that it was a question to Rabbi Tarfon. Amale, kama be'ina the meitav l'kohen. How much do I have to give to the kohen? It's not even clear here what he's asking, because there are a number of obvious items over here. The value of the peter chamor is meaningless. So why is he sending over the peter chamor to the house of Rabbi Tarfon? Number two is, we know the din is that you can use any set. So then, what's he asking? Just give a set. Why does he have to ask about the amount of this set? So the two possibilities are that one, he's asking about being poda'ed bishovyo. He's asking about the actual value of the item, bishovyo. Or he's trying to find out, is there a minimum threshold for the peter chamor itself in terms of its value? Both of those would then lend to a din, which we don't find explicitly here in the Gemara, but would indicate that there is actually not only a minimum threshold for the seh itself, as we're going to see in a second, but the chamor, the peter chamor, has a minimum value below which you may not redeem it. That means that if you go to redeem this peter chamor, this is the minimum value we're going to assign to it. It'll be no less than that value. So that if you go to redeem it, even though it's worth less, you still have to pay this minimum value. So that could be a din that derives from this question, because it's not really clear what he's asking. Otherwise, it seems to be that he's asking in the context of our Gemara the question that we asked before, which is, Vikama, can you give a patruza bardanka? What do I have to give here? Amar lei, Rabbi Tarfon responds, Hari Amru, Ayin yafeh besela. Someone who is generous will give a set that's worth a seller. Ayin ra'ah b'shekel. Someone who is more miserly will give something worth a shekel, which is half a seller. Benonit b'ragyo. And the in-between, the normal person, will give a b'ragyo. Marava yokota b'ragyo. The law is that you have to give a ragyo, b'kamo. What is the value of a ragyo? Tlato zuze. Three zuz. Rogyo hoko b'rogyo hoko. The word viragya comes from this term here, ragil hacha, and that's what the Rabbeinu Gershom explains over here. Perush, lashon viragya, diragil hacha, viragil hacha, klomar, karov laze, vikarov laze. It's close to this value, it's close to that value. Shenemar, gimel zuzim, three zuz, lo nechsar misela ela zuz, is only one zuz less than a sela, venu yoter mi shekel ela zuz. It's also only one zuz above a shekel. In essence, it's the average, the middle ground between a sela, which is worth 4 zuz, and a shekel that's worth 2 zuz. So a baravya is a little bit to this way, a little bit to that way, halfway between the two of them. And that's the value that we expect, which is the 3 zuz. And therefore, the normal seh that you would give based on this story is that you have to give a seh worth the minimum of 3 zuz. Now, according to what we said before, that the question was about a petar chamor, or the question was about exchanging it for its real value, that would suggest that you'd have to have a petar chamor that is at minimum worth a value of 3 zuz. And if it doesn't meet that threshold, you still have to redeem it at 3 zuz, even though it doesn't reach that threshold, and that was the nature of the question. Either you pay 3 zuz, or you give a set that's worth 3 zuz, even though you're exceeding the value of the petar chamor. The way the story reads in context, he's asking them what seemingly is a simple question, which is, what is the minimum value of the set that you have to give here, even though the chamor is worth much more? And the answer is 3 zuz. But what's the question? We already said from Rav Yosef, you can give whatever you want, so why is he even asking the question? That's why there are those that suggest that it's not about the value of the seh, it's the value of the seh vis-a-vis the chamor when it's in excess of the value of the chamor, you still have to give a minimum of 3 zuz. And that's the lowest amount that you can give in exchange for a petar chamor. Where it says, kasha yukhata ahilchata. This halacha goes against the halacha that we saw before. Because the halacha before we saw said that you can give a patruza bandanka. You can give even a sickly seh that's worth a danka, and you're discharging your obligation. And over here, Rabbi Tarfon is telling him you have to give something that's worth a minimum of 3 zuz, which is way in excess of a danka. So where it says, lokasha, kan bevad li malech, kan bose ma'atzmo. If he gives it, and it happens to be worth a danka, or it was a patruza bar danka, then you're yotze. Any value of a seh will work if you do it. If you come to ask us what's the right way to do this, the proper way to do this, you should give a seh that's worth at least 3 zuz. So the chatchila, or if you ask us what's the proper thing to do in these situations, we're going to tell you 3 zuz, a seh at least worth 3 zuz. If you did it already, and it happens not to be worth that amount, you're still yotze because a seh means any seh. And no matter how low the value of the seh is, it still works. Amar Rav Yitzchak, Amar Reish Lakish. Mishayesh lo petar chamor, ve'en lo seh liftoto, podeyu bishovyo. That if you do not have a seh to exchange for the petar chamor, then you have the alternative, which is to redeem it at its fair value. So this is why those that suggest that maybe the story is a prelude to this statement of Reish Lakish, that you redeem at minimal value, but there's still a minimum value transaction, which would be 3 zuz. Laman, according to whom is this statement made of Reish Lakish? Ilem el Rabbi Yehuda, if it's for Rabbi Yehuda, ha amar, Rabbi Yehuda already told us, ikbida alav Torah b'seh, that the Torah demands that you use a seh. Truth is, we don't find this in the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. It was a Havamina, as Rashi points out, back on Tet Amud Bet. The Havamina was, is there anything that you exchange for a Seh that isn't Asur Behana'ah? That was part of the Gemara's Limud as to how we know that Rabbi Yehuda believes that it's Asur Behana'ah. So the Gemara started with a premise about exchanging it for a Seh. And from that, it sounded like Rabbi Yehuda demanded that you do it with a Seh. The Gemara moves off of that Havamina and then says, well, you can do it Bishovyo, you don't have to do it the Seh, and rejects that Havamina. Rashi says that this Gemara is resting upon that Havamina, that Rabbi Yehuda says that you must use the Seh. The Rabbeinu Gershom, on the other hand, says it's a reference to the Mishnah, whereby the Mishnah says that you exchange it for a Seh. And our Mishnah, as we already noted, is authored by Rabbi Yehuda, because we saw that there was an Isur Hana'ah in the Mishnah. And that is Rabbi Yehuda Shita, and there it says, Seh. And then it gives you all the definitions, Seh Kvasim, Vizim, Gadol, Vikatan, all those things that we saw in the Mishnah, which seems to indicate that only a Seh would be good. So that's the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. So if he's makbid on a Seh, then how can you say that you do it to Shovyo, with its actual value, because he's demanding that it be a Seh. Ella, the Rabbi Shimon. It must be that this statement of Reish Lakish is in the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, who says that the petar chamor is not a surbana, then you can redeem it at its actual value, not just with a seh. Ravacha matni hachi. That's the way Ravacha explained this statement of Reish Lakish, that it references to Rabbi Shimon's shita. Ravina kashale. Ravina posed it differently as a question. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, halacha ki Rabbi Yehuda. We have a Gemara in Erevin, principles of Psak. One of those principles of Psak is that when you have a Machloket Rav Yehuda, Rav Shimon, the halacha is like Rav Yehuda. So in our case, the halacha would be like Rav Yehuda. B'satam lan tanaki Rav Yehuda. And the Stam Mishnah is like Rav Yehuda. Rashi again here says that the Stam Mishnah is because the Mishnah says that it's Asur Bahana'a. It needs to be redeemed in order to seemingly remove the issue of Isur Hana'a. Whereas the Rabbeinu Gershom again says it's because the end of the Mishnah says you need to do it with the Seh, which would be like Shita to Rabbi Yehuda. Va'at amart halacha ki Rabbi Shimon. And now you're telling me the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon? Because why would Reish Lakish make a statement in the Shita of Rabbi Shimon if the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda? Ela afilu teima Rabbi Yehuda. Must be that the statement of Reish Lakish applies even according to Rabbi Yehuda. Lo ye chamur min ha'ekdesh. How could it be that this situation is more stringent than regular hekdesh? And by hekdesh, you have the right to redeem anything at its fair value. Lo amra Torah, b'seh l'achmir alav, ela l'akel alav. And the reason the Torah provided you the opportunity to use the seh is a kula and not a chumra. That's the answer to your question as to why or where do we find such a thing. You're right, the Torah provides you the opportunity to use the seh. But it actually turns out to be a kula, because the seh does not have to meet the full value of the chamor. But in the end, it's no different than any other type of hekdesh. By other type of hekdesh, you can redeem it at its fair value. And so to over here, you have the opportunity to redeem it at its fair value. Even though we do find by hekdesh, there's a principle of Shmuel, if you're podeh, hekdesh, afilo be'pruta, then it's nifteh, it's done. Even though you don't give the full fair value, even if you give the smallest amount, it still redeems the hekdesh. So how do you reconcile this with the statement of the Gemara that you have a right to redeem it like everything else in hekdesh, which is redeemed at fair value? We have a position of Shmuel that you don't have to redeem it at full value, and it succeeds if you don't redeem it at full value. So the two ways to deal with that. One is to say that that's only true if it's the individual himself that was makdish it. If he's podeh it at that lesser value, it works. But if a third party came in to redeem it, that would not be the value. Or it's to say there that that redemption, all it does is removes the isser of hekdesh. It does not take care of the monetary value that you really should have given to exchange it for hekdesh. In terms of removing the isser, hana'ah, and the problems of me'ilah for hekdesh, that's done once you do it on any amount. But in truth, it's still the value or the fair value that you need to exchange it for is the full amount of the item. And given that, also over here, you have such a right to redeem it at fair value. LAMK, and you choose to use a set, which would be better for you because it's worth less than the chamor. So it's a dispensation of the Torah to use the set. It's not an obligation to use the set. All right. Rav Nachman, Breda, Rav Yosef, or the other birsa over here is Rav Nechemia, Breda, Rav Yosef. Parikle, Bishelke, Bishovyo. So we saw this statement before that he used to use vegetables or even seems like herbs over here to redeem it at its fair value. He didn't give a set. He redeemed it at its fair value. And you can give shavei kesef. You don't even have to give money to redeem it. As long as you give its fair value in kind, then that's fine in terms of the redemption of the peter chamor. Tosfot over here mentioned something which will become much more apparent at the end of today's daf, which is that when you redeem the peter chamor, that is when you make the bracha on it. You would have thought possibly that you make the bracha on it when you hand it to the kohen, because then you're discharging your obligation. What we're going to see on the second half of today's daf is that once you redeem the animal, the peter chamor, then it goes into the possession of the kohen immediately. Kohen's ownership is already devolving upon the seh as soon as you separate the seh and say this is in exchange for the peter chamor. Because of that, the mitzvah is done at that moment. For that reason, the Balei Tosfot would say that when you redeem it, Mivarech al pijon peter chamor. That's when you make the bracha. Velo b'shat netina lekohen. Not the time that you give it to the kohen. The me'idna de afreshe b'rshute de kohen goy. Because from the moment you separate it, it goes into the possession of the kohen. That is the mitzvah. And since that is the mitzvah, that's when you make the bracha. So that's important in terms of understanding when the exchange happens as well as when the mitzvah is accomplished. And therefore, at the point of pidyon, that's when the mitzvah is accomplished. Right before then, you make the bracha for the mitzvah that you're about to do. Amar Rav Shizvi, Amar Rav Huna. Hapodeh peter chamor shel chaveiro, Pijono padui. If you go ahead and exchange your friend's Petra Chamor for a seh, or monetarily you exchange its value, then you have done what is needed to be done with regards to this Petra Chamor. Now this is distinct from something like Shuma, as the Balei Tosafot will point out. By Shuma, you can't go and separate out Shuma on behalf of another party without their permission. Even if you're taking from your own produce, it doesn't work to become Shuma unless you have permission or the acquiescence of that party. So Tosafot says, why is this different over here, whereby you can go and exchange someone else's quote-unquote property and bring it onto your property and successfully do this without the permission of the owners? So Tosafot says that by Shuma, there's a special Gzeret HaKatuv. And he says, V'lo dami l'torei mishalo al chaveiro. It's not like when you take up Shuma from your possessions or your produce for someone else, because in the Gemara Nedarim, Gemara in other places as well, it asks whether you need dat. Now here the Gemara concludes, Gamatem, the Rabot Shluchachem. Gamatem means not only can you be Mafrish Shuma, but even your agent can be Mafrish Shuma. But then the Gemara concludes from that, Ubrinan Ma'atem L'datchem, Ashluchachem L'datchem. Just like you need to have consciousness and awareness that you're taking off Shuma, so too your shliach, your agent, needs that empowerment as well. By Shuma, there's a demand that the agent be as strongly empowered as you would be yourself. That only happens if you actually make the person into your agent. Over here, you don't have that requirement. Given that, someone, a third party, can come in and be poder, the Petra Chamor. It's all to you, seemingly to your benefit. Ibailuhu, pijanola poder. So that's exactly the question. When you come and do the pijon, are you then the one entitled to the Petra Chamor? Or does the Petra Chamor stay with the Baalim? And that this person who did that, too bad. It's a nice thing that you did, but you have no claim against the Baalim. The Petra Chamor belongs to the Baalim. In essence, the question is, who owns the Petra Chamor? Do the Baalim own the Petra Chamor, and therefore when you redeem it, you did something nice, but you have no monetary claim against him because it's his Petra Chamor? Or do we say that the Petra Chamor is owned by Hekdesh, and first come, first serve, whoever redeems it? It's like the tax system in Persia, whereby if you paid the Arnona, if you paid the tax on the property, you were entitled to use the property then because you paid the tax. So it's over here. If you pay Hekdesh for it, you're the party that's entitled. Gemara says, Alibid Rabbi Shimon Loti Baila. According to Rabbi Shimon, there's no question here that the Petra Chamor belongs to the Baalim. Kevin de Amar Mutar Bahana'a, Mimona de Baalim Hu. Since he says you can get Hana'a from the Petra Chamor even before you redeem it, it clearly belongs to the Baalim and not to Hekdesh. Kiti Bai Alibid Rabbi Yehuda. Our question is really only according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that it's Asur Bahana'a until that point. Damar Asur Bahana'a, Lehekdesh Midamilei. So he makes it like Hekdesh, because it's Asur Ba'ana'ah, so it's really in the possession of Hekdesh. Rachmano Amar. And the Torah tells us, V'natan HaKesef V'kamlo. It's not really an exact quote of the Pasuk, but the basic idea is, when you pay, that's when the property moves into your possession. When you pay Hekdesh for the Pidyon, for that redemption, then the property or the item moves into your possession. So whoever is the payer for the property, it's going to go into their possession. Odilma, Kevin de Kanile the Beni, since he has the value of the intermediate amount, Lo Domi Lekdesh, it's not like Hekdesh. This goes to the idea that the Seh doesn't have to be at the same value as the Chamor. That means that, yes, the Chamor is a Sur Ba'ana'ah, but the only thing you need to do in order to redeem it is give over a Seh. That means that the value between the value of the Seh and the value of the Petra Chamor belongs to the Baalim. They are going to actually have that benefit, which is that when they put up the Seh to redeem it, then the value above the Seh that the Petra Chamor has, now all goes to the Baalim. And since he's the beneficiary of that differential in value, it really is his, according to Rabbi Yehuda. So that's the safek we have. To be treated like Hekdesh, it's out of your possession. Or since the value accrues to you, it's really in your possession. Rav Nachman Tashma. We can learn it from here. Hagonev Petra Chamor Shel Chaveiro. Someone who steals a Petra Chamor of his friend. Mishalem Tashlumei Kefel of Baalim. He has to pay double the amount. That's the penalty for a Ganav who is caught. He pays back Kefel. And that's true here by Petra Chamor. Bafopi Shein Lo Akshav Even though he has no ownership to Balim now, he will have ownership in the end. Given that ownership in the end, we consider it to be belonging to him, and he's the entitled party or the beneficiary of the kefil over here. Mani, who's the author, or who are we attributing this brayta to? Elim or Rabbi Shimon, if it's Rabbi Shimon, am I in the lakshav? What do you mean he has no value right now? Rabbi Shimon says it's mutar ba'ana. It's not no value now, value in the future, it's even value now. So it can't be his statement. Of Shita Rabbi Yehuda, it must be that it's Rabbi Yehuda. If you tell me, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we compare the Petra Chomor to Hekdesh, it's as if it's in the possession of Hekdesh, we have a principle, but Gonevi Beta Ish, Amar Rachmana, below Beit Hekdesh, that you have to steal from a layperson, not from Hekdesh, in order to be Chayav Big Neva. The truth is, we don't learn it from Beit Ish. You actually learn it out from the word Rei Ehu, from your peer, you steal, and you're Chayav, not from Hekdesh, who's not your peer, who's not Rei Ehu. The Tosafot just points out that the Rei Ehu teaches you Mi Beit Ish, and the Gemara just quoted the Pasuk that seemingly say the same thing, even though in the end in the Gemara, where they learn this, it's really from the word Rei Ehu. But nevertheless, you do not have to pay Kefa when it comes to Hekdesh. So if it was in the possession of Hekdesh, you wouldn't have to pay Kefa. So you see from this that it must be that it's owned by the Baalim. And there's nothing else to say about this. Say an open and shut case that Rabbi Yehuda believes that it's Mamon Baalim. If that's the case, you have Nafkamino in terms of Gneiva, where you pay kefil to the Baalim. As well as if a third party comes in to redeem it, it's not going to belong to that third party. It's going to remain in the possession of the Baalim. Okay, now the Gemara goes back to the Mishnah. Akat Bichra, Vakat Shalom Bichra. One animal already gave birth. The other animal, this is its firstborn. And then we saw in the Mishnah how you set up the exchanges over there when you have a safek. Over here where you have a zachar and a keva that are born, the zachar is a safek. It came from the one who had already given birth. Safek came from the one who hadn't given birth yet. So it could be a bechor, cannot be a bechor. Our Mishnah says you separate out a set and you keep it for yourself. Now the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanan, Ketzad Amru Nichnas Ladir Litaser. Our Mishnah says that when it comes to a Petra Chamor, the set that is used in the exchange, that will go into the corral to be counted towards Maiser Ve'ema. Gemara says, Iyata Yechol Omar Bibadi Yad Kohen. That statement in the Mishnah can't be when the set goes into the possession of the Kohen. Sharei Shaninu. Because we already have learned with regards to Maiser Ve'ema, Ala Kuach, something that's purchased. When he don't know my matana, or that's gifted to you, patur mi maser ve'ema, it's exempt from my ve'ema. So now, that actually will work in both directions. That means that the Yisrael that's giving it to the Kohen for matana is clearly not chayav in maser ve'ema. Even if the Kohen gives it back to the Yisrael, or sells it back to the Yisrael, that's also not going to be chayav in maser ve'ema, because that's lakuach or matana as well. So this animal, clearly this set, is not chayav in maser ve'ema. Ella, be Israel. It has to be about Israel. But what's the scenario? As we just said now, if he gets the set back, that's not going to help you. Still put him in my ser beima. It's okay. Shayulo asaras fake pitrei chamurim bitoch beto. He has 10 different pitrei chamurim that are a fake in his house. Shayfrishalem asaras sein. He took off, he separated out 10 set to cover that fake of each one of them. Umasran. Bein shalom. He can take off maaser from them because they are his. The reason that he has to take off maaser is because they belong to him. Since they belong to him, so much so that it's not considered as if it went to the hands of the Kohen and came back. Or it's considered as if he sold to the Kohen and came back. They're his in such a manner that that possession makes them that he's chayav in maaser beima. So it's exactly the case of our Mishnah just multiplied by 10. In the case of the Mishnah, we have a safek about Petra Chamor. Israel takes off a set. And then he keeps it for himself, because it's a safek. The Kohen has no right to it. Since the Kohen has no right to it, it's his. If it's his, subject to Maiser Ve'ema. You have 10 of those, then you have a case of Maiser Ve'ema. Tosafot asks you a question. It's a machloket Rashi in the Rabbeinu Tam, whether when you have multiple sfekot, can you use one set, or you have to use a separate set for each one. According to Rashi, you have to use a separate set for each one. This Gemara works perfectly for Rashi. Because that's exactly the case here. You have 10 sfeikot, 10 sein, and therefore you have maaser ve'ema on those 10 sein. That's Rashi, l'shitato, and works perfectly. Baitos will point out, but for the Rabbeinu Tam, it's very difficult. The Rabbeinu Tam says that when you have sfeikot, you can use the set, and then you can use it again and again and again, because it's yours. you exchange the Safek onto it, then it's yours. Then you can use it again, and you can use it again. You only need one set to deal with 10 different cases over here. So Tosfot says that either you have to say that the Gemara gave the example of 10 just to make the point that no matter how many you're doing, it still is your set all along. Or the case is when he has one set, and he used it for the 10 Sfeikot, but he also has 9 other Sein that he joins it together with. So Tosfot has to try to read it into the Gemara. It reads much more simply according to Rashi's view. According to Rabbeinu Tam's view, you have to do a little bit of acrobatics to make it fit into the situation here, but you can't make it fit according to the Balei Tosafot. Asayilei the Rav Nachman, this supports Rav Nachman's contention, the Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Vua, Israel, Shayulo Asaras Safek, Pitrei Chamorim, Mafrish Aleim Asaras Sein, Umasran, Vein Shalo. It's exactly what we just found in the Breita. That's what Rav Nachman had said. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Vua, Israel, Shayulo Asaras Pitrei Chamorim, Vadaim betoch beito. It's a case where there's no safek. He has betoch hamor that are chayavin being exchanged, and he has 10 of them. Shenaflu mebeit avi imo kohen. The only little nuance here is that his grandfather was a kohen. His maternal grandfather was a kohen, and he got them from his maternal grandfather. Voto avi imo, and that grandfather, naflulo, he got these pitrei chamorim mebeit avi imo Yisrael. From his maternal grandfather, who was a Yisrael. The reason you need this is because a Kohen is patur from Peter Chamor, that we already learned, that it's only a Chiyuv on Yisrael, it's not a Chiyuv on a Kohen. So if they came from his grandfather, who was a Kohen, they already exempted from being Chayav in Peter Chamor, then there's nothing to discuss here. He doesn't have to give Peter Chamor. The idea being that you inherit whatever rights the party had. So if his maternal grandfather was a Kohen, and he didn't have to give Peter Chamor, when those chamorim are passed to him, that exemption comes down to him as well because he inherited any right that his grandfather had in these pitrei chamorim, he also has. So that's why they went to another stage upwards, which is that the grandfather of the grandfather was Israel, and that's where these pitrei chamorim started. Because then when they were in the hands of the Israel, they were chayav. When they reached the hands of the Kohen, they remained chayav in pitrei chamor. Only the benefit the Kohen has now is he can keep the exchange for himself. So the Kohen, whose maternal grandfather was Israel and was Chayav in Peter Chamor, when he passes the Chamorim to the Kohen has Chayav, just like his grandfather was Chayav. The only difference is he doesn't have to give it to another Kohen, he can keep it for himself. When he then passes that down to his grandson, the Israel, that grandson, the Israel, now inherits all those rights. Those rights include the fact that it's Chayav in Peter Chamor, but also include the rights that you could keep them. Because that was his grandfather's right as a Kohen, and he needs to keep the set. So now this great-great-grandson, who is Chayav and Peter Chamor, can keep the set that he exchanges for himself. That's what it says here. Mafrish alehen asara se'in. He's mafrish 10 se'in. Umasran ve'en shalom. He gives Maaser Behemah from them because they're his. He gets to keep them. They're actually his animals. There's no lakuach. There's no matana over here. And he's entitled to keep them. And for that reason, he has to take off Maaser from them. Because of that entitlement that he has from his grandfather, the Kohen. Bamarav Nachman, Amaravua. This is not only true here by Peter Chamor, it's also true, Yisrael, Shahu Lo Tvalim, Mimurachim, Betok Beito. You have Yisrael who had Tevel that already reached Gemar Melocha, which means now it's Chayav and Shumot Masrot, Shnaflu Mebet Avi Imo Kohen, that came to him through his maternal grandfather who was a Kohen, Boto Avi Imo Kohen, Naflu Lo Mebet Avi Imo Yisrael. And that grandfather who was a Kohen, he got it from his maternal grandfather who was a Israel. Masran, Ben Shalom, he takes off the Trumot Masrot, and he can keep them for himself. So over here, actually, your question is a good question, which is, why do you need grandfathers over here? Because the truth is, as opposed to the case of Peter Chamor, the Kohen is exempt from having to do anything at all in terms of an obligation. So that's why we needed a grandfather Israel, to make him chayav in Peter Chamor. Because if it was just the Kohen, Kohen's Peter Chamor, he doesn't do anything, because the Peter Chamor is not a sur. And so he just keeps it, and he's fine. On the other hand, if it is dealing with Tevel, Tevel, even a Kohen, has to be mafrish trumat masrot from Tevel. The only difference is that he keeps whatever he's mafrish, but he's still obligated to be mafrish. So this case, if it was just his maternal grandfather that was a Kohen, you'd have the same scenario, because even that maternal grandfather is chayav to separate out Trumot and Masrot. So here you don't need that double level of grandfather to grandfather. Nevertheless, for the parallel structure, he put it in the same structure, which is, it was a maternal grandfather that was a Kohen, whose maternal grandfather was Yisrael. So the Yisrael's produce was Chayav in Trumot HaMasrot, passed to his grandson as a Kohen. That means that the Kohen now can keep the Trumot HaMasrot. He still has to separate them because of the Yisrael. He would have to separate them as a Kohen as well. But then he gets to keep them. When he passed it to his grandson, who is the Yisrael, that Yisrael inherits his rights in the item. That means he can keep the Trumot HaMasrot. Now, he still has a problem because that Yisrael can't eat the Truma or the Trumat Maser. So he has a right to sell it to the Kohanim because they can't eat it. So he'll get a lower price for it, but he can't monetize it. And then the Maser Rishon he can keep because the Kohanim, especially after Takanat Ezra, are entitled to Maser Rishon, even though that's supposed to go to the Levi, and that's not Kadosh. And then he gets the full monetary value of it, or he can keep it for himself. And then Maaser Sheni doesn't really matter, or Maaser Ani, because they have to be given to either the Aniyim, if it's Maaser Ani, or taken up to Yerushalayim, but Maaser Sheni, that he will be obligated to do. Now, Gemara says, Vitzricha, I need both cases that Rav Nachman brought, both the case of the Petr Chamor, as well as the case of the Trumot HaMasrot. They seem to be the same case, which is, if you inherit a right from your grandfather, the Kohen, whatever right he had, you have as well. Why do you need to tell me this in two different ways? You could have told me it in one way, and I would have known that information. As Mara says, the e ashmein and kamaito, if you only told me about the case of the Petr Chamor, mishum dekam mafrish vekoi. Because either it actually was separated out already, or it doesn't come internally from the Chamor itself. Of a hocha, over here, where the Trumot HaMasrot come from the Tevel itself, matnot shlo umur, kemi shlo umur damyan. If they weren't separated out yet, it's as if they weren't separated out, and the Kohen never took possession of them, aim alone. And I would have said no. So the difference being that by Petr Chamor, either if the grandfather owned the Sein, we could say it's as if it already was exchanged, because the items that you need are all here in front of you, and it's as if it's done. It's not missing any physical separation away from the core item. The Petr Chamor stands alone. The Seh stands alone. So whether it seems from Rashi that you already had the Sein in your possession, according to others, you can be mafish the Seh in the future, and it has nothing to do with the Petr Chamor that you own, we'll view that as being as if it was done already. If that's the case, when you inherit it from your grandfather, the Kohen, it's as if it was done, and then you inherit that right as if it was done. On the other hand, when it comes to Shemot HaMasrot, you have to actually separate them physically away from the Tevel. Until you've done such, they had all considered to be Trumot HaMasrot. And so then the Kohen, when he had it in his possession, he had Tevel in his possession. Trumot HaMasrot weren't yet separated out. And given that, then he didn't really take possession. Then you don't have a right to them either. That's where it had been your Havamina. Kamash Maman, we don't say that. Kamash Maman could be one of two things. Kamash Maman, we say that Tvalim that don't have stuff taken off is Kamisha or Modamian. We view them as if they are already separated out. That's one way. Or the Kamash Maman is, even if we view them as not separated out, still, the Kohen has sufficient ownership here that it does give him the right to the Trumot HaMasrot, and when he passes it to his grandson, the grandson has that same right. V'yishmin and Hocha, if you only told me the case of Trumot HaMasrot, Devshar Lasure Minei Ubei, since there you're able to take it off internally, Daha Manoch, that because it's right in front of us, which means that the Trumot HaMasrot are readily available to us because it's subsumed in the Tevel, therefore the Kohen has ownership. Bahatam gave me the seh me'almo boy atuye. Over there we have to bring the seh from outside. It's something that's not necessarily in front of us right now. It's not readily available right now. Umafresh v'koi. And so you can't say that it's standing here and it's already mufrash. So then, aim alo. Maybe you would say no. Tzricha. And that's why I brought you both cases to tell you in both cases we consider the grandfather of Kohen to have taken possession of the item, both by the Trumot HaMasrot, and therefore the grandson is entitled to those Trumot HaMasrot. Or for the case of the Petr Chamor, the seh that's going to be exchanged is as if it's already in the hands of the Kohen, and therefore the seh or the Petr Chamor that's going to be done by the grandson will stay in his possession. In both those cases, we consider him to be the inheritor of that right. Now we move on to a new case. Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Natan, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Halukeach Tvalim Mimurachim Minoevei Kuchamim. Someone who buys grain, produce, that is already mumurach, which is the gmar malocha to make you chayav and trumot masrot, from a non-Jew, masran vein shalom. He takes off Trumot and Masrot from them, but he gets to keep them for himself. De Marchinu Man. Who did the Gemara Melach over here? Why exactly is this produce Chayav in Trumot and Masrot? Ilayim De Marchinu Ovei Kuchavim. If it was that the non-Jew who owned this produce also did the Gemara Melach on them, the Gancha Marachmana Velo Dagan Ovei Kuchavim. The Torah tells you that it has to be your Dagan. And here it doesn't just mean your dagan, the way the Gemara notes it in Menachot is, digun-cha. It has to be your processing of the produce to the Gemara Malacha for you to be chayav. But if it's the digun, the Govei Kuchavim did the Gemara Malacha, you're not chayav in Trumot and Masrot. So in this case, if the Goy did it, why are you chayav at all in Trumot and Masrot? Ella, the Marchinu Israel, mirishut or birishut, Govei Kuchavim. It's a case where the Jew did the Gemara Malacha, but it was in the possession of the, or in the property of the Oved Kochavim. Masran, the reason that you take off Shumot Masrot is, the Ein Kinyan, the Oved Kochavim, Be'eretz Yisrael, Lafkia Miyad Maser. The ownership, the private ownership of the Oved Kochavim, a property within Eretz Yisrael, yes, it gives him balut, ownership over the property, but only to the extent that he has monetary ownership of it. What he can't do is remove the Kedushat Ha'aretz that's associated with that land. Since he can't remove the Kedushah, anything grown on that land is subject to the rules of the Kedushah associated with that land. That means Shvi, Trumot, Masrot. Anything that has to do with Kedushat Ha'aretz remains true of the land that and the produce that the Goy has. The only thing is, you can't do anything about it because it's his. So you can't go over to the Goy and say, pay up Trumot Masrot. He's not Chayav in Trumot Masrot. But that means if it comes into the possession of someone who is chayav in Trumot and Masrot, it will be chayav in Trumot and Masrot. That's why you have to take off the Trumot and Masrot, because they have Kedushat Ha'aretz associated with them in the Tevel, and you're responsible. The reason you don't have to give it to the Kohen, you can keep it yourself in, Behein Shelo, and then he gets to keep the Peirot, or the Trumot and Masrot that he takes off, Darmalei Katina Mikoach Gavra Delo Matzit Ishtai Delni Dina Badei. Because the Israel can say to the Kohen, listen, you are trying to take Trumot and Masrot from a Goy who is not going to listen to you and has no obligation to give them to you. Now that they came into my possession, I have the same rights that he has, basically, which is, I don't have to give them to you. So yes, I have to be mafresh them to take off the shame tevel from them, but in terms of your monetary rights or your ability to take them, I'm empowered by the Goy who owned them, and you have no rights. You couldn't get it from him. If you can't get them from him, you can't get them from me as well. That would be the idea. Now, what is the scenario that the Gemara says in the end? Rashi claims that it's Beimim Miruach. It's being done, the Gemara Melacha by Yisrael, Bishut Ovei Kochavim. Rashi explains that it's a case of an Aris. It's a case of a sharecropper. So this sharecropper has his piece that he owns, which is the percentage that he gets from it. And then there's the portion that belongs to the Goy. And what we're saying here is that the Yisrael is doing the Gemara Melacha on these items, but it's really owned by the Goy. All the produce is owned by the Goy. So in that case, he has to mafish Trumot Masrot, but he doesn't have to give them to the Kohen. The reason Rashi reads it that way is because that's what it sounds like in the Gemara, that it's owned by the Goy, and a Jew is doing the Meiruach. So that makes it sound like exactly what Rashi says. This is produce of a Goy, where a Jew is doing the actual work of the Meiruach. What is this scenario like that, or where do you have a scenario like that? A sharecropper is a classic case of that, where it's the produce is owned by the Goy, and the Meiruach is being done by the Jew. Tosafot does not like that for two reasons, and that has a supposition within it. Tosafot says that, let's look at the two pieces of the sharecropper. Sharecropper, he gets a percentage of the produce, and a percentage belongs to the Goy. If he, say, for instance, he gets 20 or 25%. The 20 or 25% that he gets is owned by the Jew, and the Meiruach is done by the Jew, because that's his share of the crop. So that should be Chayav and Trumot Masrot like anything else. So now you're going to tell me it's the other piece, it's the Goy's piece there, where the Goy owns it, and the Jew is doing the Meiruach on his behalf, because he's going to give it all to the Goy afterwards. So that's where you're going to say to me that that produce is chayav and trumot masrot. If it ends up in the hand of Israel, he has to be mafrishit, but he doesn't have to give it to the Kohen. Balei Tosafot say that that's not true. Because if the Goy still owns it, then there's no din of Meiruach Israel, because you're an agent of the goy. The goy's property, and he's asking you to do meruach, whether he's paying for you to do it or whether he's asking you to do it. Either way, you're doing it on his behalf. And that's called meruach oveid kochavim. So that's meruach oveid kochavim for an oveid kochavim. And that's clearly patur. So where is the scenario that you have meruach Israel on the possession of the oveid kochavim? Because according to the way Tosafot views it, the meruach that's done for an oveid kochavim is meruach oveid kochavim, no matter who does it. And meruach Israel is a meruach Israel owned by the Israel. So case of Naris, you have neither case be the case of the Gemara. Obviously, Rashi and the Ramban thinks the same thing, believe that when Israel does meruach for an oveid kochavim, that is called meruach Israel, even though it's being done on behalf of the oveid kochavim, and that's where they differ in their opinion. Therefore, Tosafot says the scenario here is where the grain was grown by the oveid kochavim and then sold to the Jew before the Gemara Melocha. And then it's what it's saying is that it's meruach Israel because it was in the possession of the Israel. He didn't sell it after the meruach. He sold it before the meruach was done, and then the Israel did the meruach. That is grains that grew in the hands of the oveid kochavim, but the gemar melacha was done by Israel. That's the scenario that's being spoken about here. Obviously, that doesn't fit so well into the wording of the Gemara. Rashi's understanding is much more understandable. Melchino Israel, mirshut oveid kochavim, or birshut oveid kochavim. The meruach was done by the Israel while it was still in the possession of the oveid kochavim. The way Tosafot's going to read it is, the melchino Israel, mirshut oveid kochavim, means which was once in the hands of the oveid kochavim. Not that now it's in the hands, or the meruach's done while it's in his hands. The produce was once in his hands, but now it's in the Jews' hands, and the Jews doing meruach. That's the way Tosafot explains it. Rashi, again, explains it as being an aris. And their main points of contention is about when the oveid kochavim owns it, and he has the Israel do it on his behalf. Is that called meruach oveid kochavim? That's the view of the Tosafot. Is that called meruach Israel, which is the view of Rashi, the Ramban, and other Rishonim? The other thing the Balei Tosafot raised over here is, Tosafot notes that every statement here in the Gemara is subject to a machloket. One of which is, digunka velo dagan oveid kochavim. And there is an alternate view, which is, that it's digancha velo dagan oveid kochavim. But digunka is not the limud from the pasuk. And that means that even meruach and oveid kochavim, or Israel, wouldn't make no difference over here, because there's no demand for that. It's whether the goy owns it or doesn't own it, that's the only thing that matters. So Tosafot spends time as to why the Gemara did not go in that direction here, and as to whether maybe the wording of the statement indicates that that's not the case. And that might be because it says Vehein Shelo, that it belongs to him. According to the one who says that the Dagan of a Goy is Patur Mi Trumot Masrot, there still is the Takanat Chachamim, or Gzerat Chachamim, that you have to take off Trumot Masrot from it. And that's because of what they call Balei Kisin, wealthy individuals, who are trying to circumvent the din of Trumot and Masrot, what they would do is they would sell it to the Goy to do Meruach and then buy it back from him afterwards. And that way they'd get themselves out of having to give Trumot and Masrot. Therefore the Chachamim instituted that even a Goy's ownership or even a Goy's Dagan, Meruach that's done, is Chayav in Trumot and Masrot. That means that even in according to this case, where we say, Digun Chavlo, Digun Oveid Kochavim, even if you hold that that works, then there's still this gezerah of Balei Kisin. The Tosafot says that the Gemara here thinks that either the gezerah doesn't apply, or this case can't be about Balei Kisin, because the word says Vehein Shelo. It belongs to you. If you are really penalizing the individual for giving it to a goy, you can't say he has to take off Trumot Masrot for himself. That's not a penalty. He's going to do that anyway, because it's going to benefit him. The only way it's a penalty is he has to give it to the kohen. So the fact that it says Vehein Shelo over here, it's a clear indication we're not talking about the Gzeira. Whether that means that this Gemara doesn't hold of the Gzeira at all, or the Gemara is just dealing on a right to level, ignoring the Gzeira entirely. So Tosafot speaks to that. He also speaks to the fact that the Ein Kinyan Legoi Lafkia Midei Lushat Haaretz, he says over here, Tema, Afeidu Yesh Kinyan Chayav Lasran Mid Rabbanan. Again, even if he has a Kinyan to be Mafkia, there is a Din Mid Rabbanan that you have to take off Trumot Masrot. So then he says, oh, if you want to find a chiyuv doraita, that's maybe what the Gemara is after over here. They don't want to deal on derabanan levels. They want to deal on a doraita level. He says, there's no doraita over here because you bought it. And purchased grains are not chayam mi doraita in Trumot Masrot. They're only chayav midrabanan in trumot and masrot. So he says you're dealing with a derabanan level anyway, no matter which way you go. So why can't the Gemara say, even according to the one who says there is a kinyan lafkia, there's still a chayav midrabanan? So Tosfot over here says that there are different types of derabanans. Certain derabanans have a higher level or considered closer to Doraita, and there are others that are considered further away. It says that the din derabanan of giving Jumot Masrot from Lakuach is closer to a Doraita. It's called Chayav versus a case where you're mafkia because of the goy, where it's considered to be patur. They're both Chayav midrabanan. But in relationship to each other, when it's Lakuach, it's considered to be Chayav versus patur when it's the goy's purchase. And therefore, he says that's a higher level of rabbinic obligation, and therefore, that's why the Gemara went this way. Or, he says that this is supportive of the Rabbeinu Tam's contention. Rabbeinu Tam believes that mifareish techayav la'aser doraita. When you purchase items, you have to be mafish from them, midoraita, and you're only patur and chayav midorabanan, tehainu l'gdavka lokeach achar meiruach. If you bought it after the meiruach, then there's a patur midoraita, and you're only chayav midorabanan. But if you bought it before the meiruach and you did the meiruach, you're chayav midoraita. That chiddush of the Rabbeinu Tam solves that problem over here, because it's clear here that the lakuach bought it before the meiruach, because it's a meiruach Israel. He bought it from the goy beforehand. If that's the case, you would be chayav doraita according to the Rabbeinu Tam, and that shita of the Rabbeinu Tam would help understand or make this gemara flow much more easily because of that. And you can see that in the shita mikubetzet ot chav dalet. He discusses both the shita of Rashi versus Tosafot, and also the shita of Lakuach that deals with the Rabbeinu Tam. He deals with it a little more extensively over there. All right, so now the Gemara says, it's not autumn. We have a mission over there. Hamafkid perutav etzel hakuti. Someone who deposits for watching his perut with a kuti, vezel amaretz, or by an amaretz, who's not necessarily trusted with regards to tumat hara, shumot masrot. When you get it back, you can assume whatever you deposited, they're giving it back to you. They didn't swap out your items with their produce. They're giving you back what you had, and therefore for Trumot and Masrot and Shvi'it, whatever the status was when you gave it to him, that's the status that you get back from them. On the other hand, if you deposit it with the Ovei Kochavim, then it has the same din as the Peirot of the Ovei Kochavim. Or in essence, what we believe is that he swapped out your items for his items. He's not trustworthy here, and therefore what you're getting back is not necessarily what you gave to him. So the Tanakhama believes that that's an absolute. Whatever you're getting back is not yours, it's his, and therefore the din is like his peirot. Rabbi Shimon Omer Demai, it is a safek. We don't know if he gave you back yours, or maybe he gave you back his. It's not an absolute like the Tanakhama that for sure you're getting the goy stuff, but it might be that you're getting the goy stuff, and therefore it's demai. Now, demai over here is different than your classic form of demai. In your classic form of demai, first of all, the amaretz is assumed to have taken off truma gedola, because it's very easy to do, and it's done already. That's number one. Number two is, by the trumat maser of demai, over there, you have to give that trumat maser to the kohen, because the amaretz convinces himself that the maser rishon that he's taking off, that belongs to the Levi, it's the Levi's responsibility to take off the Trumat Maser, and therefore if he keeps it for himself and never goes to the Levi, there's no Chiyuv of Trumat Maser. That's wrong. So therefore there is an obligation to give the Trumat Maser to the Kohen, and there's no obligation to give Trumat Gedola. Over here, that's not true on both of those. Number one, the Trumat Gedola, you have to be Mafrish. There's no way the Goy took off Trumat Gedola. So that you're going to be after Mafrish. And in this case, you don't have to give not the Trumat and not the Trumat Maser to the Kohen. You can keep it all for yourself. So those are the differences between normal demai and the demai that's being spoken about over here. So Amar Abelazar, Lafrish, Kule Amar Lo Plige. They both agree you have to be mafrish the items off. Ki plige litnan the Kohen. The question is, do you have to give them to the Kohen? Tana kama savar vadai chalfinu. For sure it was swapped out by the Kohen. Ubay mitnidu the Kohen. And you have to give it to the Kohen because your chayav in Jumot Masrot is the produce from the goy, and now you're responsible to give Jumot Masrot from it, and that means the Kohen's entitled to it. Rabbi Shimon Savar Demai. It's a safek. And therefore, the Kohen has no right to get it from you. By the Am Aretz, it's vada your chayav by Jumot Maser, and vada that you're not chayav by the Jumot Gdola. So Jumot Gdola you have to take, don't have to take off. The Jumot Maser you have to take off and give to the Kohen. Over here, it's a safek in both of them. They have to be mafish both the truma and the trumat maser, but you don't have to give them to kohen because of motzi mechaver olah baraya. Yoti Rav Dimi become alash ma'itata. Rav Dimi sat down and said over this memra. Amalei Abaye, time of the misfakalon. That which Rav Elazar said that it's a safek, I chalfino, ilo chalfino. We're not sure whether the goy swapped them out or didn't swap them out. Ha vadei chalfino. If they for sure swapped it out, then both according to the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shimon, the kuli amal bayi the mitveinu the kohen. Everybody agrees you have to give it to the kohen. V'ha amar Rabbi Shmuel amar Rabbi Chanina. Isn't that our case at the beginning of the Amud? Where halukeach tvalim minovei kuchavim mimurachim. If he buys from the ovei kuchavim stuff that already has gemar malacha done, masran vein shalo. He takes off the masrot and they're his. So we just created the case exactly like our case over here. Which is, the case is a case where you bought it from the goy, it is mimurach, and here you're saying you have to be mafrish and give it to the kohen. If you know for sure it's the goy's, you have to give it to the kohen. Over there we said that you could be mafrish it, you have to be mafrish it, but you keep it for yourself. So whatever the case was over there is the case that we have over here. Because whatever made you chayav in that case is making you chayav here, it belonged to the goy. And we said before that it's only when it was mimurach ayyidei Yisrael that makes it chayav. So to the case there, so to the case over here. Both the cases, you're chayav in Shmot Masrot. Yet, Shmuel's statement is, you have to keep it for yourself. The statement we're bringing from Rabbi Elazar's explanation of the machloket between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shimon is that you would have to give it to the Kohen if you knew for sure it belonged to the Goy. So how do we deal with that? My answer is, Dilma kan b'trumah gedolah, kan b'trumat maser. It's a difference between Trumat Gedolah and Trumat Maser. By Trumat Maser, you do not have to give it to the Kohen. By Trumat Gedolah, you do have to give it to the Kohen. So now this does two things. First of all, it takes away the Ptur we said before. The Ptur is no longer because of the Goy. And saying, you couldn't have gotten it from the Goy, you can't get it from me. It's not true. The reason you can't take it from this guy is it's a Gzerat HaKatuv, that the Kohen has no rights to the Trumat Maser. When it comes in this situation, we'll see why in a second. Truma Gedolah, you are Chayav because you don't have the Gzerat HaKatuv. That's why, again, I'm saying you eliminated this concept that since it belonged to the Goy and now I'm acting as if I am the Goy giving it to you, it's not true. You are Chayav yourself. It's nothing to do with the Goy before you. And therefore, you have to give it to the Kohen unless you have a dispensation min HaTorah. That's what he says. Ad Kartan Milto, you reminded me of something that we learned. Damar Rabbi Shuman Levi. How do I know when you purchase tvalim that are already have gemar malach from the ovei kuchavim that you don't have to give shumat maser? Shneimar, bel leviim tedaber. You tell the leviim, v'amarta lehem ki techu me'ei b'nei Yisrael. When you take from b'nei Yisrael tvalim shata lokeach b'nei Yisrael ata mafrish me'ei shumat maser. Stuff that's taken from the Yisrael that you're mafrish shumat maser from. Vinod na the Kohen, and then it goes to the Kohen. Tvalim shatalokeach menovei kuchavim. If you purchase tevel from menovei kuchavim, iyatam afrishmen trumat maser vinod na the Kohen. You don't have to take off the trumat maser and give it to the Kohen. You do have to take off the trumat maser, because that's an isur embedded there that makes it chayav mitabi de shamayim. But you have no obligation to give it to the Kohen, because it didn't derive me b'nei Yisrael. Didn't come from b'nei Yisrael. That's gzer de gadum by trumat maser, then you don't have to give it to the Kohen. Trumat Gedolah doesn't have that dispensation. Therefore, even when you buy it from the Ovei Kuchavim, you have to give it to the Kohen. So the case of Rabbi Shimon and the Tanakhama is a case of Trumat Gedolah. The case of Shmuel is a case of Trumat Maser. And that's why he says you keep it. And that's why the conclusion from both Rabbi Shimon and Tanakhama, that if you knew for sure it's from the Goy, you'd have to pay it to the Kohen, that's a case of Trumat Gedolah. Just finish off our Mishnah, which is V'imet Ne'nimbo. If it dies, you're allowed to get enough from it. Damit Hecha. Where exactly did it die? Ilim in Damit Beit Kohen. It died in the house of the Kohen. Venehene Bo Kohen. And the Kohen is able to get enough from it. Pshita. What's the story? Memona Dideu. It's his. He already had it in his possession. He can do whatever he wants with the set. If it dies, why can't he get enough from it? Ella Damit Beit Baalim. It's a case where it's in the house of the Baalim. Venene bo kohen, and the kohen is still entitled to get hana from this dead set. Hanami pshita. That seems obvious as well. Where it says no. Sagadat chamino kol kama delomato liyode lo tocha be. Since the set didn't reach the hand of the kohen, then there's no acquisition. The ownership of the kohen has yet to devolve upon this set. And therefore,
you would actually be responsible to take out another seh to redeem it because it never got to the hand of the Kohen. Kabash Malan. The Me'inna, the Apashay, Bishutay, the Kohen Goy. From the moment you separate it out, it becomes the possession of the Kohen. This has dual nafkaminot. One nafkamina is if the animal dies, now you don't have to replace it. It's died in the Kohen's possession. You can get enough from it because it's already his ownership. It's already mamon. There's no Isur Hanah over here. So you can get benefit from it. The other nafkamina is what Tosafot said earlier. The bracha is made when you separate out the set, because that's when they transition into the ownership of the Kohen. Given that, that's when you have to make the bracha, because that's when the mitzvah is accomplished. And again, the havamina is the peter chamur, which has a isur hana'ah, and you need to redeem it. So the idea would be that the seh also takes on that same status as the peter chamur until it reaches the hands of the kohen. While the peter chamur is in your possession, it's problematic. So maybe when the seh is in your possession, it has that same problem as the peter chamur. When it reaches the hand of the kohen, then it changed. The answer is no. As soon as you separate out the seh, it becomes the kohen's at that moment, and therefore it's no longer like the peter chamur that it derives from, and there's no Yisrael now over here, and he can benefit from the dead set, but also Yisrael doesn't have to replace it because it was already in the hands of the kohen. Okay, we're going to end here at the bottom of Yud Aleph Amud Bet.